Yeah, so I'm Henry Hughes and I'm a sprinter, so freestyle and butterfly are my main events. That's not like when I grew up as a long distance swimmer, so definitely a change of career there. Yes, I'm a student at Loughborough University and I'm also a student at Loughborough College as well, so I've got the best of both systems here at Loughborough. I study sports management, so one of my favourite degrees to do, and I've just finished first year and a very good start to my degree. Yeah, so I always say to people that I'm born in New Zealand, I was raised in Australia and now I live here in the UK. So going right back to the beginning, being born in New Zealand, you know, I was born on my father's birthday, which is very good timing. I like to think that I translated that into swimming in terms of timing. And when my family went back to Australia, that's really where I grew up, in Sydney. It wasn't until I was 2 years old that I was diagnosed being deaf when my younger brother Rupert, when he was born, they diagnosed him being deaf. So when they got the whole family diagnosed, it was seen and a shock of the family that I was actually deaf too. So there was a lot of delay in my development as a baby then. And since then, I've worked very hard to make sure that I can catch up to everyone, and I like to think that's the case. Yeah, so probably my earliest memories of my childhood is being deaf. You know, I know that going to nursery in particular, wearing hearing aids, I didn't have a cochlear at that time. And I still remember the operation when having a cochlear implant, I think around 5, 6 years old. I remember the whole experience, and it was just so new to me. And when I woke up from the surgery and they turned on my cochlear and I was hearing all these different sounds I've never heard before, it puts tears in my eyes even thinking about it. And then the subsequent years when my cochlear implant got upgraded, like iPhones, to new different versions, I will always go back playing songs that I've listened for many years. And I'll be like, I didn't know there were backup singers. I've listened to this song like 100 times and I didn't know there were backup singers. So that's the kind of development I've been having since being deaf. And now that I'm a young adult, I'm hearing many different sounds that I never thought I would hear.
In that journey.
Yeah, so born in Wanaka and coming to Sydney, raising, I always swam for Australia growing up because my family was there. But because I was a homeschooler and my mother was British, I was always raised in British culture in Sydney. So it was always my love and affiliation to represent Great Britain. And through many adversities in Australia, through many different clubs who didn't understand about how to deal with a deaf person and a deaf Olympian later I became, it became apparent that I have to look elsewhere. I didn't want to look at America being that young, and I wanted to go and represent Britain, and the opportunity to represent Loughborough came, and all the stars aligned, and I've now been here since January 24, and I've never looked back since then. I feel so much settled in, and now I get to represent Great Britain at the Deaf Olympics, which is just a great dream come true and my primary objective since moving here. So my first recollection of actually wanting to go to the Olympics, I didn't know about the Deaf Olympics until I actually went to the Deaf Olympics at 13, was the 2012 London Olympics. So of course seeing Adam Peaty and also other Olympians like Kate Ledecky, Michael Phelps, you name it, people know those athletes. That's when I was like, I had that Olympic spark in me to go, I want to go to the Olympics one day. I didn't realise that over time, as I started growing older, that people would judge me on being deaf, not on my abilities. So that always deterred my development growing up. And I had to fight those own battles to ensure that my development can somewhat still be on track. And I feel like right now with Loughborough giving me all that support and all that help, I'm accelerating that development and making up for lost time, if you may. So, yeah. Yes, yeah, so I don't swim with my cochlear and hearing aid in the pool, because even if I did, I could if I wanted to, especially for training. You're not allowed to do that for racing. Even if I could, I wouldn't want to, because otherwise people still think I can hear. I'm like, I still can't hear. So, and I do like my peace and quiet, especially when you're doing about 8 training sessions in the pool. It can become really tiring trying to hear every little nuance and being stressed. So the pool is kind of my escape from the world, to be like, I don't want to hear anyone, I just want to do what I want to do. And yeah, it's been working so well so far. Yeah, it's now my home nation, so going to the Deaf Olympics in Japan in November is one of the greatest privileges of my life. I always knew I wanted to represent Great Britain. How I was going to do that and when I was going to do that, I didn't know. So when I saw the opportunity to come here to Loughborough University and the Loughborough Swimming Programme, I just had to take a leap of faith. I came here as a 19-year-old all by myself to a small town in the middle of nowhere in England from a beautiful coastal city in Sydney. So it was really the other side of the world. That was the kind of levels I had to take to show people that I can do it. And looking ahead at the Deaf Olympics, it makes me so emotional to think that I've been selected, because I've been planning my move here for about 2 years since the Deaf Olympics. So it's just like a culmination of many things is happening. And I'm just really looking forward to it and representing Great Britain and showing people and making history, representing two big sporting nations, specifically in swimming. Yeah, so, you know, a bit of context about the Deaf Olympics. The Deaf Olympics is actually the first multi-sporting event for a person with a disability. I mean, it existed about 36 years before the Paralympics, actually. This is kind of like some trivia stuff people might want to know about, because it was deaf people that actually led the disability movement, specifically in sports. And it goes right back to the 19th century, and there's a really rich history of deaf sport. And it used to have a lot of coverage until Paralympics came around and people thought, actually, it was more interesting watching people with more visible disability as opposed to invisible disability. So that meant our funding was cut ahead of the London 2012 Olympics and Paralympics. Our funding was cut, and it meant that Great Britain, and even across the world, and even in Australia, but in Great Britain in particular, it meant that deaf athletes have absolutely no support, whether it's from government funding, national governing bodies, even sponsorship. And if you're asking me that question, I think it's so unjust and so unfair, because the Deaf Olympics is an International Olympic Committee sanctioned event, so it should be treated in respect as the other two Olympic Games. So I'm just saying that we need to be focusing on deaf athletes, ensuring that we can build that pathway for elite deaf talent, and making sure that we can lobby the government to fund our deaf athletes, because we're not really asking for a lot in the scale of the big Olympic and Paralympic Games, where there's £300, £400, £500 million invested. We're only asking for, I think, £3 million, £5 million. So it's really nothing in the change of things, and it can have such a huge impact on deaf sport, which will trickle into deaf culture and deaf society. It means that young deaf children, I know this growing up, that when you search up deaf role models, they're not really deaf role models in terms of sports, in terms of, you know, politics. If you wanted to see the first deaf prime minister or the first deaf actor to win the Oscars, there's not really a lot of role models. And I want to make sure that it starts from the top. It's actually investing in deaf talent, regardless whether it's in sport or across many industries. And that's on the responsibility of us as a whole to spotlight that. So I hope that I can play that role in making sure that young deaf athletes coming through see, well, if Henry can come to Loughborough, one of the most prestigious university and the number one sporting university in the country, then I can do it as well. And that's the mission I always set out since I've been to the Deaf Olympics at 13. Okay. It's really, you know, ironic being deaf. I really can't hear, so I see what I see, and that's what I want to be. And that will go across many deaf young children across the country, you know. Deafness is like the second most common disability in the country after mobility impairment, yet it gets treated like it's second hand to other disabilities. People think that deaf people swim in the Paralympics, which I can say is not the truth. It's only if you have another disability that's considered a Paralympic classification disability that you can swim at the Paralympics, but that's not the case for deaf people in general. So that means you have to build those role models, build those lights. You know, if you see at the back of me all those posters and banners of Olympians and Paralympians, maybe one day a deaf Olympian will go up there. I'm not saying it will be me. I hope a deaf Olympian goes up there to show, you know, people and the public that this is what Britain is supporting, and this is what Loughborough University is supporting as well. The success of elite British talent, regardless of their ability or disability. It's a stigmatisation there. It's not a visible disability. It's not being something that people look at in terms of a culture and a society. What's so unique about deafness, it's that it's its own culture. You have British Sign Language. You have people that speak, people that don't speak, people wear cochlears, don't wear cochlears, wear hearing aids, don't wear implants at all. So there's this huge variety of deaf people in the deaf community that people are not aware about, and that's because the public and people don't pay attention. The stigma that's come from early 19th, 18th centuries and even before is that deaf and dumb. I'm always associated with being dumb because I can't hear. There's always this stigmatization that if you're deaf, you can't think for yourself. I know that's because my mother, who's also deaf, that's how I inherited it. She was born in London. She was a only South Asian in her area, and she was a classical dancer, performing artist. And she will always be stigmatized because of her disability more than her color of her skin. And she could have gone on to be great, great performing artist and a great elite talent, but because the people around her stigmatized her, she could never do it. And she doesn't want to see her son go through the same thing. And that's why she works so hard with me being homeschooled to make sure that I can be the role model and the inspiration for other young deaf athletes or young deaf children in whatever industry they want to do to come through.
It's to come to London.
Yeah, so DeafOlympics coming to London, it's making sure that we have government funding for deaf athletes. The infrastructure around deaf sport as well, making sure there are jobs in deaf sport to incentivize people working here. And it's also about educating university programs like Loughborough and World Class programs to build their sporting talent, regardless of what sport it is, not just swimming, but other sports. And that is like three of the most key metrics. And there's other things that could go along in terms of participation of young deaf children and young deaf people in society. But those are probably the three main ones that I will take away in 20, 40 years' time. Well, every DeafOlympics or World Deaf Championships have been going up and up in rankings. So for this DeafOlympics, I would love to make final. That's just my simple goal. And I haven't done a DeafOlympics since I was 13. Because of COVID, Australia and Britain both didn't go, so I could not have gone regardless. So that was a huge heartbreak. So going back to the DeafOlympics, representing Britain for the first time, even though I'm so experienced in deaf sport, there's always going to be that feeling when you represent a new country. So that's the emotion that I'm expecting, and making sure that I can take those experience from the DeafOlympics and reuse it in my advocacy to help inspire the next generation of deaf athletes so that they can feel motivated to go to the next DeafOlympics, where I hope I'll still be swimming for sure. I definitely will be.
How do you rewind now and feel what you think the happiest thing?